It's the Ogre Cave audio report, recording on, I almost don't want to tell you people when, but it's March 23rd.
Come on now, we'll get it edited a little faster this time. I won't have technical issues this time, I promise.
Yeah, no, we're back on our feet here as far as our channel.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Mike Sugarbaker.
And my name is Alan Sugarbaker.
And I'm Steve Connie from Dr. Cox and Mr. James.
Woo! Thank you, Steve, for joining us.
They're mentioned in a rap song now. Did you know that?
Yeah.
What?
What's the name of the song? Wish I Was a Little Bit Hypey or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Bay Area
like,
rap.
Tail end of it, he just gives a random shout out to Dr. Comics and Mr. Games and go. Wait, what?
Is this a nerdcore rap song?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Nerdcore is getting big enough that it can have regional hits now. That's exciting.
Pretty much. Anyway.
But the big news this week is that we've just gotten clear of Games Expo, the big effort on the part of the Games Quarterly folks to unseat GTS. And apparently it pulled a little bit of a Gen Con SoCal.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Not so well attended, evidently, from our reports.
Yeah.
And first off, huge shout out to Lee Valentine of Veritas Games.
Absolutely.
For giving us day-by-day reports on Games Expo.
Yes. We're going to have to declare him a regular-size ogre or something. I don't know what
yes.
his measurements are exactly. But
what?
He was, saying maybe he could be a mini-ogre, so let's go right ahead and
okay.
give him his badge or something.
I wasn't aware we had sizing issues.
Well, I don't. But
I should make a separate post and call out his comments that he's been posting on the comments to the last podcast we posted. But yeah, he's been doing a great job reporting for us.
Yes.
Apparently not so well attended. But, you know, not all of his news is bad about it. He apparently, if a trade show isn't so well attended by retailers, then the retailers are actually getting a great deal out of it.
Yes.
Because they get a lot of time from the publishers, as opposed to a situation like Gen Con SoCal was in where, you know, the attendees were kind of, you know, maybe they you know, had their games that they got into, but the energy wasn't there, and a consumer show really feeds off that energy.
Yeah. From what Lee was posting, everyone was testing the waters there as far as exhibitors go. Big companies had average or small booths compared to what he expected, and basically the show ended up not being as well attended by retailer-type buyers as they had hoped, and indeed as some other people had said they were promised. Someone else in the industry told me that he heard at one point somewhere in the order of 1,500 stores would be represented at the show. And come to find out, part of that was because of a Borders representative and a Barnes & Noble representative that maybe were interested in some of the things there, possibly.
Yeah.
So that what this guy I was talking to said is that's borderline bait and switch advertising right there.
Yeah.
But, if less than 400 or so badges were actually pre-sold and far more than that were claimed in advertising ahead of time, that's not cool.
Yeah, that's not cool.
If that was just optimism, okay, great. Didn't quite live up to that. But if that was actually knowing exaggeration, there's a big problem.
Yes, there is. But what it makes me think of is I almost wish that it were economically viable for somebody to put on not, you know, a big-scale trade show, but a gathering where it was deliberately small and publishers and retailers and anybody else in the industry could come in and have human-scale conversations.
Well, I know that Gamma, for the exhibitors and members of Gamma, they do kind of little mini pre-GTSs a couple times a year that they don't advertise widely by any means, but they do get together in
this
Vegas.
This is the first I've heard of them.
Oh, they've been doing it for years.
Hmm.
They do get together in Vegas a few times, and I think it's pretty much just for designers and publishers and that sort of thing. So that's probably why you haven't heard of it.
Okay.
They don't let everybody know. They just kind of get together with each other, but they do something close to that.
Sort of like an alternative press expo for, you know, how that is for a comic book industry.
Well, that's alternative press hoping. Expo is a consumer show.
Right, that's right. But, you know, something like that for the game industry, something where you have sort of everybody, something for everybody, or just for the retailers alone?
No. Well, what Alan is describing is something just for publishers.
Oh, for the publishers.
Right.
Okay.
It would just be a short step from that to say, you know, let's get some of the hardcore fans to come out too. And I don't think they would lose out on anything. By all means, they'd get more people there to demo their games to and send back word of, hey, I saw this great thing, to their groups. So
yeah, if they could go online and identify, you know, people who were just, you know, just as in scare quotes here, but people who were just fans, but thought leaders among fans, people who post a lot on forums or whatever, they will be great additions to this kind of event.
Right.
Or bloggers. Hint.
Ha. yes, the press are available. It seemed like, to get back to Games Expo and what it turned out to be, it was good for the exhibitors to talk with each other and really get things nailed down with each other or meet folks they hadn't met before, because they didn't have that many people they had to deal with that were customers, really. The retailers that did show up got a lot of FaceTime.
That's for sure.
A lot of FaceTime. And Steve has heard from the three people from his store that went,
yep,
that they really got the attention they needed from certain people they've been trying to track down for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they basically got to sit down at every booth and see everything that every one of these companies had to offer. I believe in one case, Mayfair pretty much opened up every single box of what they had so they could show them
everything,
you know, every single thing that they had. So usually, I mean, at other trade shows, you may not have that opportunity.
Yeah,
you may have, like, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
Right, there's no time to invest that sort of attention to one guy because they have to be able to rope in all the other incoming possible sales.
Right.
And there weren't those other incoming possible sales quite so much at this show. So
yeah.
On the other hand, I did hear that from the people that went that there were, you know, wasn't that many retailers, that it was really heavy on the exhibitors end.
Yeah.
I mean, the exhibitors were getting the short end of the stick here, clearly. You know, they're really giving a great sell to the people who were there, but it can't have been worth their money on the whole.
No. There were apparently, from what I've heard from a couple of people that went, there were people from the UK, from Australia, that came out to the show that bought into all of the great advertising that was done. The problem was the show did not live up to that advertising, and now they may not be able to go to GTS because they gambled on this show rather than Emma's show, and okay, that didn't quite work out. That wasn't the bang for their buck that they had hoped for.
Yeah,
certainly not.
There seemed to be a wider variety from what Lee was saying and another guy I was talking to about the show, a wider variety and just a better balance as far as what target audience they were aiming their seminars at. But at the same time, I was also hearing the seminars in some cases were very sparsely attended. So some things were done well, apparently. Lee mentioned something called Game Town, just a kind of little cluster of small companies in one booth. It's hard to visualize exactly what he was talking about, but it sounds like a concept that is kind of Forge Book-like.
Yeah, I was having a hard time figuring out what was going on there. I know that Origins has done something similar, and again, that's a consumer show, but I know that there's been deals at Origins where if you are a new company with one product, that you can get a fairly cheap booth in a certain area.
Right.
That's what it sounded more like to me.
And the GPA, Game Publishers Association, they have done booths before where three or four members of the GPA split the booth and each of them has like a quarter of the table for their one thing. So it's not an entirely unique concept, but from what Lee was describing, it sounded like whatever it was done in a well-presented manner and might be something to co-opt for other events for those who saw it.
Well, we'll have to pick his brain about what exactly was going on there.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the convention was superb for us retailers. The show was superb for us retailers. Yeah. I'm not sure how much it was for the exhibitors.
It really seems like exhibitors got the short end of the stick on this one, and as I saw it the first year, well, we both saw it since you went with me, Steve, the first year at Gen Con SoCal, exhibitors that felt like they got shafted, as it were, did not show up again.
Yeah.
So I'm strongly suspecting Games Expo will either have a major uphill struggle to do this again next year, or they might be done.
Yeah, we shall see.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm sure it is not coincidence that Gen Con announced this week that they will be instituting something new. I mean, we were talking off mic about how there's, you know, a little bit this is a codification of something that was already going on, but Gen Con announced that there would be a trade day before Gen Con Indie proper opened to the public this year.
Right.
Along with a set of seminars and talks and things. Our impression is, I think, generally that there's kind of a groundswell of retailer and publisher interest in this, that people were already using Gen Con as a little bit of a trade show. We know that Chris is normally on the show from Endgame, was talking about, you know, after he went to Gen Con, he was like, I got more business done here than I've ever done at GTS.
Right, he was so impressed with all the business he got done at Gen Con that he was flat out saying he's never going to GTS again. It was a waste of his time by comparison, which is pretty damn impressive considering how GTS is for exactly what he did at Gen Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Gen Con trying to be more purposefully for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, all the people are already there that need to talk. They just didn't have time to do it. And I'm just setting aside time to do it. It seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, that could be a real win.
Yes, big time.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. What do we know about GTS this year? I actually have the page up right now. They're coming up in late April. They've moved to a much nicer venue, as I think we've mentioned on the show.
Hopefully they won't run into the hotel logistics issues that some Games Expo people were reporting.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this.
Yeah. It was...
The Orleans, and what was the other one?
Another one in the Orleans chain, I think. South Point. Something like that. There were pricing difficulties that turned out to be just vapor rumors.
And there was a shuttle between them that also turned out to be vapor.
Exactly, yeah. People that went to the far-off hotel to cut costs ended up spending that money getting a taxi when they couldn't find a shuttle to where the show was.
Yeah.
So, just more difficulties that I'm sure didn't help Games Expo whatsoever.
Yeah.
But GTS has had problems in the past, and hopefully they won't have anything like that.
Right.
They have enough problems just confirming the time of the year they're going to happen before someone else claim jumps it.
Well, I mean, Bally's, for those who don't know, Bally's is on the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
It's very centrally located.
I don't see on the Strip as being a huge deal. Maybe it's just me. I'm not going to GTS to experience Vegas. Just a bonus.
Yeah.
Though, if you're staying in another hotel and going to an event that's in a different hotel, it makes a difference if both are on the Strip.
Well, sure. If you stay at another hotel, you hope it's next to the one that the show is at, of course. But
yeah, and there's like four hotels right next to Bally's.
Okay,
so
that's good. But the Orleans had three or four hotels next to it as well, so when GTS was there, it wasn't a problem. Maybe a slight annoyance because you had to walk across the street or something. Okay, Bally's is more centrally located to bigger hotels and most likely won't run out of rooms.
Yeah.
We hope. So,
we don't need to go that deep into that.
No, right.
But, you know, I just kind of miss Vegas is all.
We're probably sending people to this to GTS as well. It'd be interesting to hear how that matches up. How GTS matches up this year to Games Expo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Are your people going to GTS this year as well, Steve?
Yes, we are sending people to GTS as well.
Good, good. Yeah, we shall see. I'm poring over these pages, and I'm not seeing anything huge jumping out. You know, nobody large is missing from the list of exhibitors that I can see. You know, the three W's are all there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's nothing really to say more about GTS. Hi, how are you?
GTS is still happening, and people who hoped Games Expo would fail are possibly celebrating already or maybe holding their breath. We'll see. I think GTS has the stronger following and is going to be the winner in this particular race.
Yeah, well, at least I think it's good that they got some competition.
Yes. Someone needed to wake some people up, as Chris has said numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this did it, and they're not just going to sit back and say, see, he failed. We don't need to do anything.
Yeah, we don't need to do anything else.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Cool.
Other news this week, Wizards of the Coast announces their first, is this their first card model constructible strategy game, rather?
I believe so.
Yeah.
The Transformers CSG, that's WizKids' term, of course, CSG, although they seem to be abandoning that term. I'm not sure exactly what the Transformers game term is. I can look it up real quick.
I'm sure WizKids is hoping that this 3D battle card game, a constructible card game that offers longtime Transformers fans, easy-to-learn game, playable right out of the pack, I'm sure that WizKids is hoping that they don't become the second-place publishers of such games after Wizards of the Coast, just like they did with pre-painted miniatures.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. You know, they have the Star Wars license.
Yeah.
Star Wars versus Transformers I don't think is a real fair fight.
No, I don't think it is either. But I'm sure they are hoping, going, all right, we're keeping this big slice of the pie. You guys can have a small one this time.
Mm-hmm.
We're damn annoyed that you became the biggest in the miniatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if, I mean, I made the post that said that this was a little bit of a Me Too product,
mm-hmm.
but I almost wonder if it wasn't more than that, if this wasn't thrown together as a direct response to the Star Wars pocket model game announcement.
Well, this may have also been mandated from on high, Hasbro saying, you're coming out with something for Transformers movie release, right? Right? So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's probably the most likely scenario, is that Hasbro said, you know, you will do something for Transformers now,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Wizards, you know, long ago said, well, Transformers really kind of demands that you have guys who transform.
Go figure.
And they have guys who transform, you know, to their credit. I mean, the only model that we have graphics of, you know, we have a photo of Jetfire, who I guess is an Autobot.
Yes, the Veritech ripoff.
Yeah. And in his robot form, this model that we're looking at, he looks maybe a little doofy.
Where's his head?
That's the problem. Yeah, where?
Yeah. But, you know, it's just one model.
Yeah, that's true.
It's only a model.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's, we've reached our Monty Python quota for the episode.
One?
What?
Is that our quota?
I guess that's
quota. All right.
I'm cracking down.
And scaled back. I like the fact that Autobots and Decepticons will be able to blow apart in this game.
Really? Where does it say that?
I mean, whether they're designed for that or not, you can make them blow apart.
Oh, well, okay. That's true. I was thinking about how I hope that they've designed the game such that if you have a large Transformers collection, you can just use those.
Oh,
okay.
You know, if they go with, like, measuring distances with card edges or something, then you can't do that as easily.
Right.
But I hadn't thought of the advantage with these models that you can just tear them up.
Yeah, take an arm off or something, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I hadn't thought of that. All right, Alan wins the episode.
I do?
Yes.
Sweet.
Yes.
Does that mean I get another quote?
No.
That's
not right. Monty Python one.
Fine.
Cool. Don't push your luck, buddy.
I don't want it anyway.
So this is coming out in June, so about a month before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When was the Star Wars model game coming out?
Ooh, July, I thought. I'm not sure.
Huh.
$399 a pack. That's not bad. Didn't you say there's going to be a Fing Fang Foom?
Yeah, WizKids is doing that whole Fing Fang Foom promo figure this convention season.
I noticed in the photo that he didn't have his trunks, dude.
Ooh.
What's up with that?
Ooh. You're going to have the dragon junk just hanging out for all to see?
Well, I guess we'll finally find out what's underneath those trunks, huh?
I wasn't wondering.
Well, see, here's the thing. It's now, I don't know if it's canon or not, but in a series called Next Wave that Marvel published over the last year,
uh-huh.
in the first issue of Next Wave, it was published that, you know, Fin Fang Foom's whole motive for destroying things was that he has been burning to reproduce since his inception, but not only can he not find his mate, but he has no genitals.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Well?
That's probably not canon.
I hope not.
Wow.
What do you mean you hope not? It's awesome.
If he tried to reproduce, it would be like a canon.
Wouldn't you be pissed off?
Yeah, no junk? Yeah, I'd be pissed off.
If you had the urge but no junk?
Wow, that would be a
darn
cruel twist of fate.
Yeah.
Your entire motivation is to reproduce with nothing.
Put that in your danger room and smoke it.
I'm not smoking anything in that vicinity.
Yeah. Okay, I'm looking for... I don't know what we're going to do with this portion of the show, but I'm looking for a release date. I'm seeing May 24th through 28th at Star Wars Celebration. No, that's the preview.
So
that's the preview. Released at retail in June. So they'll be about concurrent.
Okay. So this may even be kind of sort of trying to compete, although they are different markets, really.
I don't think they are.
I do. I think the Star Wars is going to appeal to a slightly older audience unless you really dumb down the rules.
But within gamers?
Within gamers,
it's not the same generation. Yeah,
but
yeah, I think you're talking about the same people.
As far as the mass market appeal, I don't know. I think it's a different group a little bit. There's some overlap, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think these things are going to reach that far outside of a gamer audience.
Mm-mm.
That they're really going to, that you can really say that they have different markets.
If you just released the Transformers rule thing with some maps and cool little weapons or something to snap onto your Transformers you already have, your toys at home, that might be something that would break beyond the regular hobby market.
That would shrink the market for this game, I would think.
No, that would just be something to appeal to the mass market generation, those that don't really want a little fiddly put together the card thing.
I think that's five people with enough Transformers to do that, too.
True.
Yeah, I mean, then you've got. I think there's a Venn diagram of, you know, people who own Transformers and people willing to play games.
Yeah.
And the overlap between those is pretty small, probably smaller than the people that they're going to hit with this. But again, that's just me, and I can't prove it. While I'm at the WizKids site, I'm rechecking the release date on Halo Action Clicks.
And?
Because I have to confess, I'm still pretty into it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hitting retail till September.
Yeah, that's a ways off still. I think they're trying to time it more towards Halo 3's potential release.
Yeah. Yeah. Halo 3, I imagine they're making a hard push for October or November. So, yeah.
License mania.
Yeah, well, Halo is a license that makes perfect sense, though.
Halo is a good license that appeals to a hell of a lot of game fans out there, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're supposedly doing a Gears of War movie. Have you heard this? Or at least they're optioning it. I don't know if it'll come to light.
Yeah, options don't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, everything's been optioned.
Yeah, there was supposedly a Halo movie in the works that then got tanked pretty quickly. So,
let's talk a little bit from the media angle. Let's talk a little bit about the retail angle. Steve, what have you been seeing interesting with the troops on the ground lately at Dr. Comics and Mr. Games?
In the trenches. Well, we've actually been selling quite a bit of everything. Again, usually it's one thing that's kind of cooled off a little bit has been our World of Warcraft. It seems to have cooled off a little bit.
The CCG.
The CCG, yeah, has cooled off a little bit. But everything else seems to be doing pretty well. A lot of the board games are still pretty strong. Even things that are slowly or rapidly becoming classics like Carcassonne and things like that are still selling quite strong. We still sell quite a bit. Interesting, we were talking about WizKids. We still sell off Suro. We sell, you know, She still, which is interesting. Okay. It's one of those games that you think may have been...
It's a pretty solid seller. It's got solid appeal to casual gamers. So
Ingenious is a particularly good seller.
It's always...
Yeah.
Every time you're on.
And every time I'm on, I sell. And every time I'm on, we, you know, it's like we're down to one copy.
There must be a cabal of fans of it that keep sending new friends to go get it.
To go get it. we have a few, you know, few games that we really don't have to work at selling. Things like Apples to Apples. Things like A Set and Quiddler. These are games that people we have found have played, other people have played, and they come into the store specifically to buy these games. It's like they come in for Set, and so, no, they're Set.
Should we get into currently playing? Because that's where you've got
some really
recent stuff to talk about that you really got your hands on.
I was about to guess that we were probably going to gradually shade into
that.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's go there.
What have you been playing at the store lately, Steve?
Well, first on the list is Shogun. It's written by it was developed by Dirk Han, I believe. It's a really pretty cool game. In fact, I really like the this is a game that has sort of this odd sieve mechanism for determining winners of conflicts. You have these little wooden cubes that represent your troops.
Now we're not talking about the old Shogun, are we?
No, this is kind of a new game.
Okay.
It's still a game about gaining territory, and you do this by taking over other people's territory with troops that you build up over time in these particular territory in your own little provinces. And
that civ thing sounds interesting.
Yeah, basically what you end up doing is when you have a conflict, you end up scooping up all the units involved between the two, you know, warring provinces. You dump them into this box that allows some of the pieces to filter down through this very large screen. And at the bottom, you know, the whatever pieces are left, you sort of match up the ones that between the two players that are fighting, you match up the pieces that are left, and whoever has more pieces is kind of the winner.
So it just randomly catches some and dispenses
the rest,
the survivors.
Regurgitates the rest into this tray. Now, here's an interesting thing: is the more conflicts that you have, the more that you have pieces that can get caught up in there. And every now and then, you might get lucky, and some of the pieces that you dumped in there that were caught up in there will just sort of pop out, and that might mean the difference between you winning a particular conflict.
But you don't clean them out from...
No. They all stay in there.
Oh.
So, you know, you have like a handful of farmers up in there. You have all kinds of stuff. So they're hiding out in there.
They just slowly saunter their way back to a battle a month later.
I think it's to represent that in feudal Japan, some people would show up to battles or say that they're showing up to battles and wouldn't show up at all, and other times they would, you know. Suddenly you're fighting and, you know, out of the east comes your allies and could make the difference between you winning and losing.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
So it is pretty neat. The rest of the people that we tested with at the store, I really liked it. Two of us really liked it. The others were kind of lukewarm about it, and one guy really just wasn't feeling it.
Okay.
There's a number of levels of complexity of this game, which is kind of cool. You have to, you know, figure out what kind of money, which provinces are going to produce money for you, which are going to produce manpower, which are going
to
produce rice.
All of your standard...
Exactly. Well, the rice thing is really interesting because when you hit the winter time, it's sort of divided up into seasons. Each segment is divided up into seasons. Mm-hmm. When you hit winter, you actually have to produce enough rice for the number of provinces that you have. And if you don't, well, farmers could revolt, and then you have to fight the farmers as well. So it's all kinds of different levels of things that you
have
to worry about.
Keep your resources happy or they will attack you.
There's a lot of things you have to worry about in this game.
Nice.
This makes me super happy that rice is back as a resource in a samurai game.
In fact, it is the...
Makes me feel good about Tenjo.
Gold and rice. You know, those are the two resources you have to think about.
Oh, I'm looking at the sieve thing, an image of it I found online, and that's an impressive-looking tower there.
It's all cardboard. You assemble it,
right.
You put it together. The one thing that was a little weird was the instructions. This is a two-sided board that we're dealing with here,
mm-hmm.
and it's not always entirely clear which side of the board you're supposed to be using with what cards. There are supposed to be little markings on the cards. The rules were not always entirely clear as to what you – the instructions weren't always entirely clear as to what you're supposed to be doing. But it was a pretty cool game. Once we got started, once we got warmed up and sort of used to how the game flowed.
So you liked it.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
There's at DungeonCon this year, this one guy had basically transferred this map to a huge piece of vinyl and was using
the
same
huge games like that at
DungeonCon. And had miniatures representing the units, and it was apparently a very mighty game of Shogun. I wish I had photos of it.
Well, what else have you been playing?
I've been playing Catan History, Rome. This is the Roman version of the Settlers of Catan.
Mike's favorite game.
Sorry about that, Mike. But, you know, actually, this is pretty cool because you get to invade territories and take over stuff. There is some trading of resources, but really it's about kicking other people's butts and taking stuff for yourself.
Nice. That doesn't sound Catan-like, really. But.
Well, you have to. There is a whole dice rolling mechanism of gaining resources so you can build your...
So is there a thief?
There is. Actually, it's called the Roman Legion. And you can plant this guy. When you roll a certain roll your dice, roll a 7 on these dice. You can plant this on a particular resource that your buddy might, or maybe not your buddy, might be playing, you know, in an area that you're, you know, that's playing, and basically kill the resources
in right.
a particular, wipe out, you know, legions, hordes, which is pretty cool. You do have 2 hordes, one a horseman and one a sort of foot soldier looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, they're virtually identical in how they're used. You don't have any extra moves for being a cavalry type horde or anything, which is a little weird. You'd think that there'd be some sort of difference between the two, but apparently not. but it was really, one thing I liked about it in particular is that there's less of a chance of being really hosed on die rolls. You know, for me, I've never really wanted a game of Settlers of Catan. I really kind of find that annoying, partially because the reason I usually lose is very early on in the game, I never get the die rolls I need for resources.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else is building stuff except me. And, you know, 2/3 of the way through the game, I still don't have anything. With this game, since you're moving around the board and your die rolls for resources change depending on where you move, invariably you're going to come up with something. You know, you're going to be able to have something that you can use to build stuff, which is kind of cool. It's a little bit like, you know, like Settlers of the Stone Age.
So, Mike, why is it you don't like Settlers games, and does this sound even remotely intriguing to you?
I have to say, my first impulse when people ask me what's wrong with Settlers and how I would fix it, my first impulse is to say a little less of the tradey-tradey and a little more of the fighty-fighty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it might be a step in the right direction, but ultimately my problem with Settlers is not the trading, it's where the things that you trade come from in the first place.
Hmm.
It's just huge amount of luck and a huge amount of dependence on that initial placement of your cities.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's always been a problem for me as well. Like I said, in this case, you can kind of change your luck by moving to high value areas or areas that might have a little bit more better chance of getting stuff. There is a little bit of trading early on, we found out. But as the game wore on, we were pretty much hoarding our own stuff. We weren't doing a whole lot of trading.
You attacked me last time. I trade you nothing.
I have 3 cows. Does anyone want to trade me for, well, anything but a cow? No, sorry, dude.
That seems to be how most of a game of Settlers goes anyway. Everybody goes, I have the 3 things no one wants. You want some?
No.
And everybody says no.
Well, in my experience, it's been, don't trade with him. He's ahead.
Yeah.
And so.
And finally, we have Industria, which we really didn't get to play much of because we couldn't understand the board. The board was in German because obviously they had plenty of German boards, and included in this box, the English version, a translation sheet so you can figure out what the board meant.
Nice.
Oh, that's not such a good way to do it.
For a $35 game, we weren't really happy with that. It seems like it has a pretty good mechanism for buying or bidding for the tiles that you need. But we really didn't, because we had to try and figure out what the tiles said and because we had to figure out what the board said, we really didn't get into it that much. So that's what I have. That's what I have on my currently playing. I have basically 2.5 games for you.
Is Industria a new game or...?
Actually, it's an old game. It's just been recently released here.
Okay.
Steam.
Recently sort of brought to English.
Yes.
All right.
And judging by the fact that the boards are in German, apparently they had plenty of these left over.
Okay, that's not a good sign.
From an earlier printing.
Yeah. I have a similar profile. I have about 2.5 games that are fresh in my mind.
All right, bring them on.
One of them is a homebrew, but it was pretty interesting. Zach, who runs our biweekly... RPG group, mostly RPGs. A friend of his is working on a superhero role-playing game based on the film Mystery Men.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And has a great core mechanic, which is just basically you pick your power, and then all of the other players pick how your power is nerfed.
Okay.
Which is very true to Mystery Men. It's like, you know, I can turn invisible, but only when nobody's watching.
Right.
We had a hero in this game who had hair control. That was the player's own pick, hair control. Could control anything that was hair. And then somebody just comes out and says, okay, but not if it's dyed, and only if you're singing German opera at the time. Obviously, this is a game that shades towards the silly, which is fine, because that's on theme. And there was a similar thing going on where you have a dice pool, you know, you pile on a bunch of D6s anytime you want to roll for something. You roll your pool, a 5 or a 6 is a success, but you look at the next lowest die, and the difference between them, that's how many, you know, yes but clauses that the other players get to add to your success.
Okay.
So that made the game take a little while longer, but it definitely increased increased the silly as well as the cool.
Cool.
So there was that. I don't want to say too much about that because, well, it's also a very, very simple design, and I also don't know who's designing it or where they're taking it, so I should shut up about it. But we played that. We played a game of Inspectors, which is a Jared Sorensen design.
Right.
That's
I-N-S-P-E-C-T-R-E-S.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a souped-up new model Ghostbusters-themed game. And there's a lot of narrative control given to the players in this game, including probably the most, you know, massive narrative control tool that a game can have, which is known as the confessional in this game, where it's based on the real world, where you can suddenly have a player get up and go over to the couch on the other side of the room, and then suddenly everything is future cast. Like, they're talking about their hindsight memories of what happened in the game that you're still playing. And so you can just say, yeah, you know, that went okay, but then when the coffee pot blew up, then things got really scary. And, you know, your statements are then considered as factual, and you play that out.
Interesting.
And it's very powerful, and it ends up being very cool, and it ends up totally destroying any prep that the GM attempts to do. As a result of that, our game didn't go completely silly. Like, we actually did tie it up into something that resembled a story, but it really didn't resemble what Zach thought he was going to run.
Well, that sounds like it's as much of a unpredictable game for the GM as it is for the players, and I can totally get behind that.
No, you all have to have your improv skills.
That's why I'm very much against fudging the dice rolls in role-playing games these days, because if you accidentally kill off the lead character in the story you were trying to run, you got to improvise as the GM, and I like that.
Yeah, it's just another challenge. You have to find some way to make it awesome.
Yeah,
I like that a lot, too. And then we attempted to play Dungeon. Clinton R. Nixon's Dungeon, which has gotten rave reviews here on Ogre Cave, but I have never actually gotten to play it before. And I'm sad to say that we only got about halfway into the game. Because we, I think Zach as a GM kind of overreached what the system is really fun to work with when it comes to combat. I think he that wasn't grammatical at all. Incidentally, in the beverage portion of our show, I've got a little cask strength Laphroaig that I finished earlier, so that's my excuse.
What are you drinking, Steve?
I've got just your vanilla, regular Coca-Cola. Not even a vanilla Coca-Cola. It's just
Vanilla's hard to find now.
Yeah, it's just
really
just standard old regular Coca-Cola.
They kind of phased it out. It's black cherry vanilla now. Or nothing at all.
Okay.
I've got the peppermint white mocha from Starbucks.
Oh, good, good.
So,
But yeah, we ended up getting into, once we got into a serious combat, it just ended up feeling a little bit too much like a D20 combat for us. I think we've gotten used to the kind of very dependent on narrative fiat kinds of ways of moving things forward.
Right.
And so that might be a selling point for people more into traditional role-playing. But for us, it, and in part because it was the last game that we attempted in the evening.
Oh, this was all in the same evening.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Our first two games, we got done with both of them in under 60 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, which I think is a little uncharacteristic for Inspectors.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that would be a speedy one.
Yeah, I think Inspectors is very flexible as far as how you GM, and Zach just totally threw himself into the improv, so we just wrapped it up.
Nice.
We just found a way to do it, and that was what we got out of it. But it left us a little bit not ready to dive into a more serious dungeon crawl kind of experience, which ultimately is what Dungeon is for.
You were spent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It just wasn't what we were after at this point.
All right. Well, maybe trying it when you're fresher and more prepared for that particular game would work out better.
Perhaps. I would especially like to, and I suppose that was the perspective that our reviewer on Ogre Cave had on it, but I would really like to see what, you know, some people who are totally enthusiastic about dungeon crawls thought of using Dungeon. I'm less enthusiastic about a straight dungeon crawl these days, so I'm probably not the best judge.
Yeah, I haven't done one of those in a while.
I don't think you've ever been particularly enthused by those.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's true. But that's about what I've got.
Okay. I've had my regular D&D campaign ongoing every week. A couple of side sessions here and there to fill in when characters wandered off by themselves, and instead of just GM fiatting them right back to the fold, I took the player aside and got an extra session in and tried to kill Steve's halfling with a stone giant, and it didn't quite work out for the stone giant. We're working on setting up a Torg game sometime soon, I hope, with my revised and expanded edition.
Ah, yes.
Which I've had for over a year, despite it only reaching retail outlets a couple of weeks ago.
Is that the one that's done for you?
Yeah, that's the one you picked up at Gen Con for me two Gen Cons ago.
Yeah, and we don't know what's up with that.
Yeah. Oh. Interesting that. Don't quite know what happened there, West End Games. Anyway, I still need to sort out what all I got in my Unhallowed packs for my D&D miniatures. They're just kind of over on a shelf waiting to be sorted, and I'm not really down with that right now. And
no? You don't want to bust one
out? I've busted them open and looked. I just haven't sorted through and okay, I have this many of this many of that, and now I can throw all of these at the characters or whatever.
Okay. Because, you know, I'm all about the live booster opening.
Oh, live on mic. Booster opening. I'll keep that in mind for the next release. I'll bust something open and go, yeah, this sounds great, doesn't it? Wish you had these, don't you?
Yeah, this is great.
Right on.
Yeah.
Next time.
Then beyond that, I came very close to teaching my daughter how to play Magic. I think that'll be within the next week or two.
Wow.
And it'll, of course, be an old, out-of-date Magic that I own. So.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of give her a taste of that, see what she thinks. She's into any game that I've put in front of her, pretty much.
Nice. Well, I guess that's not... I mean, her eighth birthday is coming up, right?
Her eighth birthday is coming up real soon, yeah.
All right, well,
we'll
get her.
I guess that's...
Yeah.
Wow.
It should be interesting.
It makes me feel old, but I guess, yeah, out of context, that makes perfect sense.
Beyond that, I've played... I've actually beat a couple of songs on Guitar Hero 2 on the hard setting.
Good.
That's my triumph for the week.
If it makes you feel good, it's okay.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I am a rock god. Or as long as I can just press a button to make it happen.
Yes, just keep telling yourself that.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's about it for me.
I actually forgot a game I should mention. I played Once Upon a Time.
Oh,
Atlas Games card game.
Awesome. Yes. What did you think of that game?
I think it's not... I think when it's adults playing it, or maybe just adult gamers playing it, it's not really a complete game.
Okay. Right.
You know, I think if you just follow the rules, you won't necessarily get any kind of story that's going to make you happy.
Right.
And we've been trying to figure out what it needs to really push you towards more of a satisfying story. I think it needs to have something mechanical that both limits the number of elements that will make it into the story and rewards you for, you know, hitting themes again rather than just moving forward through your hand of cards.
Some other pulling the story off in some weird direction just because you had the card for it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. For those not familiar, Once Upon a Time is essentially you have two decks of just cards of things that might go into a fairy tale. Items like ring and I think sword and, you know, characters like wolf and child and old woman and events like, people meet or someone falls in love or this animal can talk or whatever. And you just lay things down, and if you start to stammer or if you introduce something else into the story, because you're not restricted to what cards you're playing, you can throw other things into your story, but if somebody else has the card for what you're putting into your story, they can play the card and take over narration. And there's also interrupt cards where if a certain type of card is played, you can take over narration. And the goal is to play out your hand of cards, and then play your ending card,
mm-hmm.
Which you get dealt two of them, at least in the, you know, with a number of players that I've been playing with. And they say things like, and they were reunited, or, you know, and they never spoke of it again, or, you know, sentences that you might end a fairy tale with.
Were you playing with the Dark Tales expansion at all, or have you...
No, we weren't playing with the expansion.
Okay.
Just the straight version. And that kind of rewards you for just spewing out a bunch of stuff and putting it into the story, at least if you're a grown-up and you're not... and you're focused on the game rather than the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the solution is there. It feels like it's not a role-playing game yet, in that it's not, you know, putting our focus on the story.
Right.
And it's also kind of not a game because I basically just told you all of the rules.
Right. Yes, that's basically what my impression of that game was as well.
Yeah. It feels like a toolkit. It feels like a very promising toolkit.
I have actually used this in the past to sort of, you know, guesstimate a plot line in some cases for role-playing games. You can almost, like, deal yourself a hand and, you know, line them up and say, all right, you know. But I've noticed that this game plays differently with kids than it does with adults. I think that when we ran Once Upon a Time in the kids' room at KubliCon, it's sort of a different experience for them because they have a little bit more of this sense of wonder. They don't have any fear of saying the wrong thing or taking something in a very weird direction. And the stories were very, very entertaining. You know, it wasn't, it was a very different kind of thing. I think when we're adults and playing this, we're thinking about, you know, almost bringing a strategic aspect of the, all right, what should I be playing next in order to, you know, get rid of the hard cards in my hand or whatnot, so I can get to the end of this. I think you're right. I think there's something missing with that game. That
Well, maybe you should be. And by the way, I've done the whole deal cards out to guide an adventure on the fly, but I use magic cards.
sure.
Maybe you should be looking into taking the same group of players and go play The Adventures of Baron Munchausen and see how that does for you.
Oh. Yeah.
Similar concept. You know, that's from the Hogshead Publishing.
Yeah.
Or maybe even stealing concepts from one to augment the other.
Definitely.
Atlas has gotten lots of great sales over the years out of Once Upon a Time, and lots of people like it.
And to be fair, it actually sells in our store. I mean, we actually, you know, it doesn't, like, it's not flying off the shelves or anything, but every now and then you'll look up and say, oh, we've got to reorder that, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. After a fairly dissatisfying game experience, I went and bought a copy.
That actually speaks volumes for the game design there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm using it in my Game Chef design that I'm probably not going to finish. The Game Chef Indie RPG Design Competition is on right now.
Uh-huh.
It's over at the end of the month. Don't look for my submission because I'm probably not going to finish, and if I do, it will probably suck.
Don't forget I ever told you.
Yes. We'll cut this part out.
Yeah, we'll edit this out. Sorry. What
Game
Chef?
Scene missing. What else we got?
That's just about it for now.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Right on. We didn't talk about Perplexity Season 2, did we?
No.
I don't remember if we did.
No.
Yeah, I posted about it. I don't know. Read our site. We write words, too.
Go, if you want to hear more of the details on Games Expo, Lee Valentine's posts were outstanding, blow-by-blow, from an exhibitor perspective.
Yes, and I'm going to call that out in a separate post on the front page very soon.
And I think Steve and I might be going to play some Thunder Road right about now.
Woohoo!
Thunder Road!
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah!
Yeah! All right. Thank you all for listening once again to the Ogre Cave Audio Report, for subjecting yourself to this yet again. I'm Mike Sugarbaker.
And I am Alan Sugarbaker.
And I'm Steve Carney.
All right.
From Dr. Cox and Mr. Gaines.
Don't forget your plugs, man.
All right. All y'all take care of yourselves till next time. We out.